right, let's, wait, what do I have to do? Open the, open the meeting of the House Interim Committee on Business and Labor, December 11, 2012. We have five members present, others coming in, but we'll go ahead and start with the first agenda item, informational meeting on access to medical care presented by several chiropractors. So we'll invite the panel up, starting with Dr. Sabo and whoever he'd like to bring with him.
Oh, here.
And as you speak, please just state your name for the record.
Good afternoon. Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kennemere, members of the committee. My name is Lynn Fuhr. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
My name is Lynn Fuhr, and I'm a registered nurse at Salem Hospital. On August the 18th, 2012, I injured my back at work and have been off full duty since then. I was improving under the care of my chiropractor, but was forced by SAFE to see a doctor on their MCO list. This was very disruptive to my continued improvement and counterproductive. If a healthcare provider is willing to see injured workers following the MCO rules, they should be allowed on the list of MCO doctors. The sequence of events. On August the 19th, I went to urgent care at Salem Hospital. I was in a great deal of pain, and the left side of my mid to lower back was swollen. The attending physician prescribed hydrocodone for pain and naproxen, an anti-inflammatory, with instructions to see the occupational health doctor on August the 27th. I did not improve during this time and found the hydrocodone made me nauseous, so I only took the naproxen. I informed the occupational health doctor of this when I saw him, and he prescribed Flexeril and a return to work, stating, "Research shows that the sooner you return to light duty, the quicker you recover." I explained to him that I was not sleeping due to the pain and had to spend the night in a recliner. My back was still swollen. I was unable to put my own shoes on and unable to drive. A physiotherapy appointment was made for 10 days ahead after I was expected to return to work. I was very worried, knowing I couldn't do this. So I called Human Resources at Salem Hospital and inquired if I could see my own chiropractor, who had treated me in the past and I trusted. I hadn't seen him straight away as I did not know how this would affect the workman comp status. I was informed that in the state of Oregon, he could take over as my primary for 30 days and workman's comp would pay for 18 treatments. I was so relieved. I knew at last I would get treated and not just medicated. I called Dr. Schmidt that afternoon, and the next day I had an appointment and regularly for next few weeks. As well as adjustments, I had ultrasound, massage treatments, and an exercise program was created. On September the 5th, Dr. Schmidt sent me for an X-ray, and on the 27th of September, an MRI of certain symptoms persisted. Gradually, the sessions decreased from four times a week to twice weekly, and I was improving. However, between the 30 and 60 days, I had to find another provider, as per SAFE. This I did, and Dr. Bay referred me back to Dr. Schmidt. On October the 24th, I received a letter from SAFE stating that I had been enrolled in managed care. Dr. Schmidt is not an MCO provider. November the 5th was the final treatment paid for by SAFE. Then Dr. Bay wanted to refer me to a neurosurgeon that he had worked with before just for an evaluation. This was declined, and a local MCO provider was found. From the time the referral was sent, this MD was on vacation for the next week. The following week, he reviewed my information without seeing me and concluded that this was not a case for him, no surgery needed. I had already expressed that I would not be keen to go down this route at this time. A referral was then made for Dr. French at Salem Rehab. I saw him on December the 4th, and as well as citing me to modify duty, he sent a referral for me to continue with Dr. Schmidt. this making perfect sense to have the continuity of treatment. However, SAFE did not approve this. It has to be on their list of MCO providers. To summarize my situation, I have been off work since August the 18th, 2012, because of a work-related injury. Through my own initiative, I found out that a chiropractor can be your primary care provider for 18 treatments in 30 days. This information should be provided. I was improving steadily when SAFE changed to managed care. So from October the 24th, I was referred to three doctors, eventually seeing the third one on the 4th of December. In the meantime, from October the 24th to December the 4th, I have had no therapy. Now my present doctor wants me to continue with my chiropractic treatments with someone who knows me and has already treated me for this condition. This has been turned down, and I have to start with someone new again. An appointment has been made for December the 14th, as there are only two MCO chiropractors around this area, one in Kaiser and one in Salem. In my professional opinion, I believe the treatment that I was receiving from my chiropractor, Dr. Schmidt, was immediate, consistent, and effective. He ordered the appropriate x-rays and MRI. No one else did. I believe that if I had been allowed to continue under his care, I would have been back in full work now instead of having to start again with new doctors on the limited MCO list. Thank you.
Chairman Garrett and Co-Chairman Kinneberg and panel. Daniel E. Beeson, chiropractic physician. I live in Lake Oswego and practice in Southeast Portland. I've practiced 38 and a half years in Selwood. With the change in going to managed care over 20 years ago, I've seen this interfere with patient-doctor relationship greatly. I'm treating second and third generation patients, and if they get injured on the job, grandfather, father, mother, refer their sons and daughters to you, and then you find out within a week or two that you're not on the managed care list and they're pulled out of the office. You may have treated them prior as they grew up as children. So this is quite disrupting to them to be interfered with their treatment and the relationship that you've built over time. In the Portland area, there's approximately 2.2 million people, 785 chiropractic physicians, 43 belong to a CareMart, 43 belong to Providence, and approximately 10 belong to Majoris. So it's difficulty, and within the city limits, I tried to do a review of all the zip codes, that it only appears to be to me 6 or 8 chiropractic physicians covering that whole area in the Portland city limits. Just last Tuesday, I get a phone call, an injured worker. I was about ready to leave the office, but I'd stay and see him. My staff stopped me, and I said, let me talk to him first and just see what's going on. Injured approximately 3 months prior, managed care. My first answer is to him, he's referred by a very good patient of mine, I can't see you. He says, what if I came to you and paid out of pocket? I said, you still have an open claim? I can't see you. So there's a consumer there that the ability to trade with that individual and work with them is interfered with. And I just see these stories go on and on and on within my practice. So if some way we could make it available that if physicians agreed to follow scheduled managed care agreements and manage these patients, it would be great for the consumers in Oregon.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Dr. Beeson, a question. If a person still has an open claim, you cannot see them even if they're referred, or you need a referral, or what's the basis for that? I guess I'm sorry, I was not quite aware of that.
Well, Co-Chair Kenner, so he has an open claim in managed care, so I can't see him on managed care.
Yes, that's correct.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay, but you could see him if he paid out of pocket.
I understand I can't. He's still got an open claim. Claim's closed, then he could see me out of pocket.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair
Kinneberg.
I'm sorry.
Basketball.
One quick question. If someone came to you and you started treating him, then you could continue to treat him or not?
So if they're
Let's say I came to you, I'd hurt myself. I elected to go see you, and you aren't part of the group, I guess you'd call it.
Right.
Would I have to go see someone else, or would you continue with your treatment with me?
I'd start your, most of the time, new injured workers are kind of an emergency situation. We'd start to initiate your care, and then we right away find out that you're in a managed care system, so we start preparing, trying to find you a list of somebody to go to so you can continue care without interruption. You would have to go to somebody else.
So you're telling me that even though you're my, you've been my chiropractor forever.
Yes.
I have to go see Vern Sabo because he's on the list and you aren't.
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kittimer, members of the committee, Dr. Vern Sabo representing the Oregon Chiropractic Association. I'll make my comments brief. The current closed panel managed care organizations currently are not allowing chiropractic physicians on panel, and our contention is it's not in the best interests of injured workers, and it is actually driving up costs. And many of the injured workers have to travel some distance to find someone who is on panel. If a provider, chiropractic physician, is willing to follow the rules and the pre-certification requirements, such as if I want an MRI, I have to show the medical director a clinical need, we should be allowed on panel. I mean, what's the downside? Now, we've talked about cost, but there's vendors who will do credentialing very inexpensively, and or the cost of credentialing a provider could be passed on to that provider as an application fee. I think Caremark Comp has a $500 application fee. At least I had a colleague that mentioned that. So that could be passed on to the provider if he's willing to do that, if they're willing to see injured workers. And incidentally, not all of my colleagues are willing to see injured workers. We have an access problem. So in our mind, if in fact a chiropractic physician who specializes in the musculoskeletal treatment of injuries, not the least of which are low back injuries, the single most expensive work-related injury, why not allow them on panel if they're willing to follow the rules? It's in the best interests of injured workers. That completes my testimony. I'd be willing to answer any specific questions you might have.
Representative Doherty.
This might be kind of a naive question, but why are people not allowed to be on panels? Is it, I mean, be part of the managed care that list?
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kittimer, Representative Doherty, members of the committee, I'm not real sure. There's a lot of conjecture. There's a lot of theories, but not really completely clear on that, and I could make some suppositions, some theories, but they're not based in fact. I can only guess.
Okay.
Yep. Look, Mr. Chair, yes, if I could just to respond a little bit as a former provider, my perspective is that increasingly those panels have become rather arbitrary decisions made by the organization, mm-hmm. And a lot of it is surrounding the ability to control costs and access, mm-hmm. and typically there's a lot of discrimination against certain types of practitioners. The good side is that within some limits, they also can make some arbitrary decisions to not include people who they may have some reason to believe are maybe not as proficient or professional as we might hope. But the downside is very significant, and it's very difficult for a lot of these alternative providers, and there's a large array of them, to get seated on these panels because they're usually controlled by the MDs.
Okay.
And that's my slightly biased view, but that would be my interpretation of it.
Representative Tucker.
So what I just heard was that there are subjective standards for being admitted to a panel, which I guess means that you are eligible for someone to seek reimbursement, or you can bill the insurer directly. Are there objective standards? I mean, is it just completely, well, you know, it could come down to the decision maker doesn't like you? I mean, how does this process work? I actually don't think it's a stupid question at all. And I'm not a doctor or a healthcare provider, and I don't know how these decisions get made typically. So can you describe the process? I mean, is it objective standards? Like, obviously, you have to be licensed. You have to carry a certain amount of insurance. What?
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kittimer, Representative Conger, members of the committee, that's what the credentialing process is for, is to filter providers who may have a track record of inappropriate behavior, have been sanctioned by their board of examiners, have had some criminal activity in their past and so forth, to weed out those providers who are below the standard of care, quite frankly. As far as the ability of doctors to be willing to go through credentialing, my colleagues are. They're simply told that the panel is full. And I'm sure I'll be corrected if this is currently wrong, in the Portland metro area, again, population of 2.2 million Oregonians, there's 10 chiropractic physicians on Majors, formerly Oregon Health Systems panel, and 50-some on Providence and 50-some on Caremark Comp. And I have nearly 800 chiropractic physicians who specialize in the treatment of musculoskeletal injuries, not the least of which is low back pains, with their hands up saying, and when we have a medical access issue, they're willing to treat those injured workers. And one other point I'd like to make is, I made this frequently, we're a one-stop shop. We do hands-on treatment, namely the thing we're known for is spinal manipulation, which, oh, by the way, the state of Oregon, it's the only non-pharmaceutical intervention the state of Oregon now recommends for the first 4 weeks of acute back pain. It's also recommended for subacute and chronic. We do our own physical therapies. We pride ourselves on keeping the injured workers off medications, not the least of which are opioid narcotics, which is the number one prescribed medication within the workers' comp system. Nearly $6 million a year is being spent on opioid narcotics, which just leads to time loss because the workers can't work on when they're under that type of medication. And I say we do our own physical therapy. We take and read our own films. And so the arbitrary restriction within the panels and outside the panels, in our view, is not in the best interest of injured workers and is not saving costs. It's increasing medical costs.
Mr. Chair, if I could just add a little bit, too. I think, from my perspective, one of the reasons I keep thinking we need to have this discussion more is that one of the big problems we have with injured workers is abuse of medication and addiction that comes from all heavy use of these very strong medications. And at this point, the way the system works, there's very little opportunity to explore alternatives. I think years ago, and I was here when the decisions were made to basically kick chiropractors out of workers' comp, there were some flagrant examples of abuse where people saw people extensively for prolonged periods of time and unnecessarily. That's unethical, you know, unprofessional, and wrong. And I think most everybody in the chiropractic profession and other alternative professions agree. On the other hand, it's something about balance here. And particularly when, you know, you're told to go home and take medicines for weeks on end and not given exercises, not given any manipulation, nothing, and frankly, being wiped out and unable to function and in pain is not a very successful way to live one's life, if, just from a subjective perspective. And factually, it doesn't usually help people get back to work. So that's part of why I think we need to be talking about this, because it's also running up the cost of workers' comp. This nurse, Ms. Fuhr, is a good example. She believes that had she continued with chiropractic, she would be back at work, functioning, and would be a happier circumstance for all concerned. Her employer would be out less money, workers' comp would be out less money, and all things would have worked out much better. I think. Thank you for sharing your personal experience. I appreciate it very much.
Representative Esquire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
On the panel, you keep referring to this panel. What is the makeup of the panel? Example, let's say, of all the physicians and chiropractors and everything like this, chiropractic people in the state of Oregon, what's the percentage of those versus the physicians and vice versa on the panel? Is that in line, or is there like 1% chiropractic, whereas there's 10% of the population is chiropractic? I mean, of the professional population? I mean, I'm curious.
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kittimer, Representative Esquivel, and members of the committee, I don't know what those percentages are, but I can tell you that the percentage of medical physicians to chiropractic physician, which on each of the panels is significantly, there's a disparity between the number of medical physicians versus chiropractic physicians. And the current rules are that for each geographic service area, each GSA only has to have three members of each profession or provider type in that geographic service area, which is a little antiquated and not very realistic. So by having only 10 in the Portland metro area in that GSA, which I think is GSA 4, Majoris is in compliance.
All right, further questions? Thank you, Dr. Sabo, Dr. Beeson, Ms. Fuhrer. We have another panel of three to testify on this topic. Dr. Miller, Dr. Johnston, and Dr. Hartwig, please. Again, please just state your name for the record when you start your testimony. Thank you.
Chairman Garrett and Chairman Kenmer and members of committee, my name is Dan Miller. I'm a chiropractor in Woodburn, Oregon. I'm going to speak fairly quickly because I understand we have a little bit of time here. I've had the opportunity to participate in numerous of workers' compensations advisory committees. One of the most recent ones was the hassle factor committee, and specifically addressing the topic of limited access and the reasons why practitioners don't want to participate in this. And so one of the issues that we're hearing is to open up the expansion of the MCOs to allow any willing provider to participate in that. One of the things that may or may not be known is that many of the participants on that panel currently don't participate in workers' compensation, meaning that if you were to get this list of doctors that the injured worker says now you have to switch to, Even calling that list of doctors up is difficult to find one that's going to take a workers' compensation case. Even though they have been credentialed, they've been accepted, they're on this MCO panel, they're not taking workers' compensation. And that's true in the city of Woodburn. We have 25,000 people. We have one chiropractor on the panel. We have 10 to 12 medical practitioners on the panel, and the only one willing to take a case is the nurse practitioner. None of the medical doctors will take it. And then, therefore, you have to go outside of the office and or outside of the city into Salem or up into Portland area in order for anybody to get the continuity of care to go to a different practitioner. And so there is not just the limitation of allowing a willing participant to join the panel, but then you have to find ones that are actually on the panel willing to take the case.
Co-Chair Garrett, Co-Chair Kenmer, and members of the committee, my name is Todd Hartwig. I am a chiropractic physician and a small business owner. My practice is in Northeast Portland. I'll read a quick statement here that I prepared, essentially a letter. On September 17th of this year, I first treated a patient who was injured while on the job. This patient is a street sweeper operator who was walking in a dimly lit parking lot, stepped into a pothole he could not see, and jarred his neck and his lower back. He had a cervical or neck MRI performed, and he was evaluated by Dr. Daryl C. Brett, MD, arguably Portland's best neurosurgeon. Dr. Brett determined that the patient was not a surgical candidate and referred him for chiropractic treatment. This patient was seen by another chiropractor before coming to my office. He sought treatment with me because the other chiropractor was unable to accommodate his work / daily schedule. I treated his neck and low back on September 17th and September 18th, 2012. The next day, on September 19th, my office received a phone call from the patient workers' compensation insurance company informing us that the patient is enrolled in an MCO, a managed care organization. Because I am unable to become a treating physician on the patient's specific MCO, or any MCO for that matter, I could no longer give the patient the treatment he needed. Similar scenarios have happened to patients of mine in the past. Similar scenarios have happened to patients of many colleagues of mine throughout Oregon. When regulations are in place that dictate the type and amount of care patients can receive, it is clear that the injured worker's best interests are not a priority. I am a doctor that is willing to treat injured workers if I have that chance. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Dr. Dale Johnston. I practice in Wilsonville, Oregon, for the past 31 years. I really don't have much more to add. I think the doctors have covered most of the main points. I think the couple things that really need to be considered is availability, time, travel. A lot of times in 31 years of practice, we have patients come in and they come to us not just because they want to see me, but because we're convenient. We're in their community. A lot of times, like Dr. Mueller said, sometimes these people in these workers' comp injury cases have to go outside their community, take time off work, which is costly to them, costly to their employer. It costs some of these people time and travel. Some of the other problems we've had is referrals to specialists. Sometimes we have a patient comes in, they need a clinical psychologist, they need an orthopedic doctor, they need a neurologist. And making these referrals have been difficult a lot of times because not having access to the MCO doctor, they're not always getting that a lot of times the company doctor's job is basically to give them a pill and get them the heck out of there and back to work. They're not getting the care they need. The bottom line as far as acting, bringing people into the MCOs, I really think it's just a question. Nobody's asking for anything more than what the MCOs have. It's just saying we're willing to play with the rules, we're willing to provide the services that those people need, and I think the winners really are the injured worker. Certainly the doctors in their community be able to provide services for their community, and the employers. They're going to have employees that get care and treatment in a cost-efficient manner without having to take a lot of time off of work. And I think those are the reasons, basically, we really need to open up these panels and let people participate if they choose. Thank you.
Thanks very much. Representative Kenemer and then Representative Doherty.
Dr. Hartwick, I wanted to go back to you. Did I understand you to say you're not a member of a single MCO panel?
Correct. I am on health insurance panels, but not health any insurance. MCO panels.
Okay. And let me ask in that regards, health insurance panels, are they difficult for chiropractors, particularly new ones, to get on?
It's definitely more challenging for a newer, a recently graduated student, whatever you want to call the doctor, yes, than an established one. Yes, it is.
What about the rest of you on that issue, if I may ask, about MCO panels?
I just been told every time we've been trying to get on one for a number of years, and just been pretty much told that they're closed in our area.
Yeah, that's the standard answer because that's defensible legally. Yeah. Okay.
And I have not attempted to get on an MCO panel at this time.
Okay.
But I do treat workers' comp patients.
Okay. Senator Doherty?
They pretty much answered my question. Thank you.
Okay. Further questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate the testimony. This is an issue we'll continue to discuss, I'm sure. So we'll close the informational meeting on disruption of injured workers' treatment. And we have a short work session now, which I'll now open for the purpose of introducing committee bills. And I will ask Ms. Norland to describe the, actually I think we're going to have four today, if she could briefly describe the four concepts that are in front of us.
Mr. Chair and committee members, LC 176 is relating to exclusive remedy protections of the workers' compensation statutes. It extends the exemption from liability to partners, limited liability company members, general partners, limited liability partners, and limited partners. LC 821 is proposed legislation that restores the ability of the director of DCBS to order the payment of temporary disability compensation for up to 21 months when a worker is actively engaged in training. LC 2612, this is a placeholder bill. It's relating to alcohol. It was requested by the committee co-chairs. And LC 1433 requires the bank board of directors to hold a regular meeting at least once every 2 months. And it removes the requirement that the audit report submitted to DCBS be certified. It permits investment of assets in membership interests of limited liability companies in certain circumstances. And it permits an exception to the prohibition against the bank knowingly allowing a depositor to overdraw a savings account if the overdraft is inadvertent.
Thank you. And, of course, as usual, this is just a vote to get the bills introduced into the process. No commitment of support. Any questions about those? And I would take a motion, Mr. Co-Chair.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I move that we introduce the following measures as committee bills. LC 176, dated 12-10-12. LC 821, dated 10-24-12, LC 2612, dated 10-10-12, and LC 1433, dated 10-26-12.
Okay, Co-Chair Kenner moves introduction of LCs 176, 821, 2612, and 1433 as committee bills. Is there any discussion? Do we actually need roll call vote?
No, you can just go back.
No. We'll just
without objection,
so ordered, and that will close the work session.
Close the work session. Let's talk for a second.
Okay, we'll close the work session on committee concepts, Mr. Co-Chair.
I think this concludes our business as the Business and Labor Committee, both the original one and the interim one. And as co-chair, I want to say thank you to everybody. I think we represented a remarkable committee. We did good work, I think. We got along. We developed trust, and I think we produced some outstanding legislation. Mm-hmm. And I suspect we may even see some of ourselves in the future, in the relatively near future. Whoops, what did I say that was that?
Well, bad? We did get along with Representative Esquivel.
What I'm laughing about is that I said, and you, Representative Hoyle, was on time once.
And I said twice. I just wanted to be known I was on time twice.
I panicked twice. I panicked one time when I came in a little early and she was here.
But we all have our individual characteristics, and it's part of the mix that makes our committee good, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, hang on. I'm disproving co-chair's comments about how well run this committee has been. Turns out that I only asked the question if there was a discussion on the drafts. I didn't actually ask if there was any objection. So I'm going to reopen the work session on the committee bills and ask if there is any objection to the introduction of any of the four concepts as committee bills. Now's your chance. Seeing none, so ordered. And I'll reclose the work session on committee bills. Thank you for your comments.
Any further business? And I would like to say I appreciate Mr. Co-Chair working with you.
Very much so.
It was easy to work with you and everybody, I think. So I thank you all for your cooperation.
I signed up to be in this package.
And wish you happy holidays and all of those things.
Appreciate the sentiments, and I share them. And we will close the meeting of the House Business Labor Committee.
Thank you.